Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, let's talk Mariners with Ryan Roland Smith. Hey, Ryan, how's it going?
I'm doing fantastic. How you guys doing?
We're great. It's really, really nice to talk Mariners when you're coming off of a sweep. First time this season.
Yes.
It's early yet, so maybe we'll see another here coming up. But what to you was key to the Mariners in a nice little turnaround they made over the weekend?
The generic answer is, pitching has rounded into form. The starting pitching has looked like we're kind of expected coming out of spring training. But I'll be honest with you guys, just look, Mitch Garver hitting a home run yesterday. I'm sitting here watching this guy hit, and I know he's getting frustrated in a new place, trying to, do more than what is asked for because he's trying to make an impression. And just watching him hit that home run in a big spot yesterday, it was huge. Just because, look, I know offensively, Julio's starting to get going, JP's starting to contribute a little bit more as well, which is great, and that sends a ripple effect. But just when you have new guys coming in, whether it be Polanco, Mitch Garver, and obviously Mitch Haniger's been here before, but when they start doing big things and getting high fives and picking up the trident in the dugout, it just helps because, look, like I said, they put extra pressure on themselves, but they're coming into a situation, Mitch Garver especially, where coming off a World Series win, coming into a new organization. And those conversations, man, we talked about last time I spoke to you guys, get in the outfield, you start having those conversations about the grass was greener on the other side or when we were this team or whatever. It's natural. So, again, when I saw him hit that home run, I was like, oh, here we go. All right, this is nice here. Now, all of a sudden, some of these veteran guys can have that good, positive outlook, especially going into this road trip.
Ryan, what was fun watching the game last night, or what was fun watching the game last night or yesterday, and the thing that sticks out to me was post-game, Miller goes, man, I didn't have really, command of my primary pitch, so my secondary's got going. I go, what are you talking about? I mean, I see really one big mistake, and Ellie took advantage of that. Did you see that? How would you assess his primary and secondary pitches?
Well, I think, when I'm watching Bryce Miller, a couple things with him, and I've said this to you guys, I've said it a bunch. The days that are most important to him, and I'll get to that in yesterday in just a second, but the days that are more important to him than his start day are the days in between, how he recovers. I spoke to Pete Woodworth the other day, during my show, and he just talked about the biggest thing with Bryce. He's uber talented. He can adapt better than anyone. He has that mindset to take on, different approaches, especially secondary pitches, but it's what he does in between, prepping for next starts. And I mean that in a sense of health-wise and a sense of how he's going to go out and attack hitters and really have, a nice little formula or trust what's working that day. Because sometimes, and we saw this last year, there's times where he can get away from a big weapon because he's like, it's not working today. I'm going to go with this. And that can sometimes get him into trouble. As of yesterday, I think that the one thing with him compared to what we saw the early version of last year compared to the last month of last season, what we're seeing this year is the fact that he's got multiple ways to get hitters out. And, look, the big trend with him was the fastball at the top of the strike zone. Then he got away from that and he's got that two-seam fastball. He's showing that split. So I think he's got multiple ways to get guys out. And, he's so transparent sometimes the way he can sometimes get a little self-deprecating. But I just think that the biggest thing with him, when you have option three and option four, when it's a 1-2 count or a 2-1 count, like in a big situation, it's like, man, I'm on the ropes here, or I really have to go for the throw here and get that punch out, get a swing and miss. It's not a situation where it's like, oh, man, this is my bread and butter, this pitch, this fastball at the top of the strike zone, and then that one secondary pitch. And he has now option two, option three, option four, and he's comfortable and he's really confident in those situations. And that's the biggest thing. But like I said with Bryce, it's middle to late April we're looking at now. May, June, July, those months, those dog days can get to him. So I think what's really important is essentially today, tomorrow, and the next day in between these starts to make sure we can see what we've been seeing out of him for 6 months.
We're seeing some good things out of Mitch Haniger in his second stint with the Mariners, and he's on an 8-game hit streak, and it was never a question of whether Mitch was good, but only of whether he could stay healthy. That being said, Ryan, Bump and I were specific about kind of giving a tip of the cap to the Mariners for that offseason move. Does anything about his second stint in Seattle look different? Is it the same old Mitch? Do you see improvement anywhere or change anywhere? Just tell us about his season.
Well, I think that what I like to compare him to, you always go back, and when you have a player who was in a Mariners uniform and they leave and then they come back, you try and compare him to when he was at his absolute best. And I think when Mitch is at his absolute best, and I'm kind of counteracting what I said or contradicting what I said, excuse me, to opening night. Well, he hit that ball on opening night, right? That home run to right field. I was like, man, look at that oppo pop. Like last time he did that was back in 2021, hit the ball to right field. And I'm looking at when he's the most successful, the months pre his Giants days. And honestly, the days he's most successful, there's a bit of swing and miss in there, and he's hitting everything to left field with authority. And I think with Mitch, what you're seeing is that a little bit more of a balanced approach where, if he's in a tough spot or something where he's a little overwhelmed, he's able to drive a ball to right field. Yeah, that's fine. But man, when he's in those damage counts, he is staying to the left side of the field. I know everyone likes to say, you got to hit the ball the other way. I think Mitch is way more valuable when he is straight selling out and just drop and drive and try and get that ball into left field with authority. And I'm seeing that with him. So I think that if he can deal with some stretches of swing and miss with Mitch, and you see him start hitting the ball hard to left field, straight pull hitter, I think that's when he's at his best. That's where he was when he hit, 39 bombs a couple of years back as a Mariner. And that's what we're starting to see now. And put it this way, man. I mean, look, the offense has been a real struggle all year long, but he's just been really stable in the middle of it. He's been in the middle of the lineup, a little bit further down. It's been good to see. And look, he's in a good mindset being back as a Seattle Mariner. You never quite know. And I've said this a few times, and you still don't know just yet. He went to the Giants, signed a deal, was high-fiving his agent. I'm back home, everything else. Didn't work out. And then he comes back to Seattle. And you kind of question like, how does he really feel about being back here? And it's been nothing but good stuff in regards to everything he does off the field. But even on the field, man, he's been really stable at the plate.
There were some times where the bullpen has looked a bit shaky this year, Ryan. I thought it was so important that they came in yesterday, and held it down, man. I think it was important for them to see and to feel that. What do you make of the bullpen so far this year?
Well, I think, losing Matt Brash and then Santos out of spring, you knew the depth was going to get tested a little bit. And then on top of that, you got to remember too, I know that the starting pitching has been much better in the last, 5 to 7 days. But before that, you've got a situation where you've got your ace and then you've got George Kirby going 4 or 5 innings. And they're coming out short. So you've got to lean so heavily on that bullpen. Not to mention the fact that the games are still kind of staying tight. So you're really testing that depth. And we all know that you can have that one or two guys. And this is kind of the problem that the Astros are running into. You can have one or two guys at the back end that are absolute studs. If you don't have that 3, 4, and 5 behind them, you're going to be in trouble. So I think that with the Mariners, I saw Stanek the other night. I was at that game a couple nights ago, and he ran into a bit of trouble there at the end. I'm not worried about him at all. I just think that, man, if when the starting pitching can start getting a little deeper, like we've seen this last turn in the rotation, and you start getting to that 6th and 7th, it just stabilizes that bullpen. And I think that as we've gotten into these last couple of games, you're starting to see their roles kind of stable out just a little bit more as well, as opposed to having to put the puzzle pieces together because your starting pitching's falling short. The plan kind of goes out the window when they're falling short by an inning or two.
Tell us a bit about the opportunity going forward and challenge going forward with a series against the Rockies on the road and then the Rangers.
Well, I think, look, the Rockies have had their issues. I think they're going to have longer term issues. I think internally with a road trip, regardless of where they're off to, we saw this last road trip, right, where, Scott Service even made a comment post game in Toronto, when Polanco caught that ball over his shoulder, he's like, we could all take a breath. It was so much, putting so much pressure on getting off to a good start. They felt like they had that short leash because everyone's talked about how important April is to basically rid the 2023 memories of the first half of April, May, June of 2023. they want to get off to a good start. They hit the road for the first time. Scott Service talked about getting to know your teammates, those first, you know, you go out for dinner, everything else. So I think this into this second road trip, they are coming off a sweep of the, this last series of the Reds, and they're in a good mindset. The Julio is starting to hit. That I talked about having a trickle-down effect. The foundation of the pitching has been good. So I think with this road trip internally, they just need to take a breath, man. Chill out. Enjoy each other's company, whatever they do on the road. Who knows? And then just go to town. But they're in a good spot right now. And it's amazing, too, guys, the fact that you win three in a row, just the perception of this team and the outlook and the optimism starts to change quick. So, man, if they can go off to the road, steal some wins, they'll be in a good shape coming back here to Seattle.
Yeah, it's definitely changed. Last week, man, we were ready to rebuild and start all over, right? And now three-game winning streak, good.
Amazing.
Man, and during the streak, you've had some performances, man. You got Demo who had his moments. Rojas comes off the bench and goes yard. Urias has improved. How important is it that you get kind of spots of great play from those guys like the guys that I mentioned? Excuse me.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, it's huge, man. I think Dylan Moore, put it this way. I mean, going back to you mentioned him and watching him play, man, diving for that ball, on the warning track over there in left field, in the South Territory, just stuff like that. That speaks volumes. It just speaks absolute volumes. And you mentioned some of these moments, some of that little magic, some of that luck, that when you're struggling, you don't seem to find it. And all of a sudden, things start to fall in place when the defense starts to stabilize a little bit and start to look good, much better than what it did in the first couple of weeks. You can get those moments. You give yourself a platform to have those moments. So you mentioned some of these guys off the bench, man. I mean, I can't speak highly enough in regards to guys who can just fill that gap. You never want a situation where someone's dealing with and we've seen this over the last couple of years. The really good teams have those stop gap players. You know, obviously the Dodgers are just full of them, man. They can have anyone who can fill in a stopgap when it comes to someone dealing with a sore wrist or an ankle or a day game, day off or whatever. And then all of a sudden, because I know it when I'm starting against them, when I know I've got a midweek day game and they're going to put in a bench guy or two, I'm like, oh man, sweet. If I can get through the chunk of this lineup, the meat of this lineup, and I can get down to that 6, 7, 8, and you're putting so-and-so in, he's hitting 220, he's not playing because of that, I'm loving it. So I think the Mariners, when you have guys who can come off a bench like Rojas, you mentioned, and you have a Dylan Moore who's all of a sudden catching up to fastballs now like he hasn't in the past, 95, 96 miles per hour at top of the strikes, and he's able to get to them. It just makes it so much tougher. And you don't have to be in a situation where it's like, oh, man, we're going for the throat here, and we've got six or seven in the lineup, and it's someone hitting 210. So it's good to see, and you need to have that depth. So that some of that luck in that moment, those moments, that magic, you know, you get them when you start playing well.
Scott Service mentioned that this was a team that could take criticism and it could be blunt and could be honest. Had you heard of like any player meetings that happened or any players standing up in meetings and saying anything over the last 10 days or excuse me, last 2 weeks or so?
You mean recently?
Yeah, or just at any point. But does anything stand out to you?
No, I think like one thing that was mentioned was like the, hey, stop looking at iPads. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure you guys know that. You know, it's look, when you are searching, when you're searching for, because here's the deal. And look, Scott Service, we talk about this a lot. There's been a couple other moments here where it's like, you know, finger pointing going on and everything else. And so you start to look at the coaches and say, well, the coaches need to do this or do that. Scott Service needs to be, start flipping tables over in the locker room and all this kind of stuff. I always say this, man. If Scott Service, I've talked to you guys about this too, and last couple of years, if Scott Service can have that one-on-one relationship with the veteran players, Mitch Garver, Kaniger, some of these guys, Cal Raleigh, I'll throw him in the mix as well, has that relationship where he feels like whatever message he's sending, it gets echoed by your veteran players, then he's in a good spot. Now, if he says, for example, the comment he made about, hey, we've got to look at the iPads less, he's basically referring to the fact that guys are just trying to get into the weeds, reinvent the wheel on what's happening from an analytical standpoint. And I totally agree with him. If he goes out and just as a group says, oh, you guys are going to stop doing this and doing that, and you start sort of, ripping on someone's approach, then you're going to be in trouble. However, if you go to it and say, hey, look, hey, Mitch, hey, Haniger or Garber or some of these veteran guys, hey, what do you think, man? When you're watching some of these younger players, man, they're just staring at these iPads. They're getting really in their head about it, getting way too analytical. Don't you feel like they need to take a breath and you know, get back to just doing the, you know, the basics or whatever? I'm just throwing words out there. And then they echo that message and they say, yeah, I agree, man, totally. Then you're in a good spot. So I think when it comes to team meetings, you got to tread, you have to tread lightly, but you got to be really smart about it. He tends to have a really good relationship with some of these players, and it's super, super important, as opposed to just, you know, sort of ripping on or discrediting someone's approach or someone who loves to look at iPads a ton. So I think that's really, really important. But as in regards to him talking to the team, I don't know specifics because I've asked and I haven't gotten the full, you know, like I've kind of given the shoulder shrug just a little bit on that. But I think that's really, really important, especially this time of year too.
He is Ryan Roland Smith. Don't forget that you can catch Ryan's Top Step podcast, which now airs weekly on Root Sports. Good stuff from Ryan, as always. Thanks so much, Ryan.
Thanks, Ryan.
Of course, guys.
All right, let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
We must make headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacey.
Headline number one, the Seattle Times Kraken beat writer Jeff Baker says tonight will probably be the team's final broadcast on Root Sports. What's the real headline?
Not a joke, but a question. What local network is going to give up primetime programming for the Kraken?
It's going to be a tough one because they haven't given you much to sell. You got to go out there and sell this organization. I guess you have to lean on the potential. We got a couple young guys on this team who could take them to the next level. Don't forget, just last year they were in the playoffs, made a little run. That's what you're leaning on because as of late, they're not very marketable. So good luck there, but someone's going to pick them up. There's no way you're not going to have Kraken games on TV out here in the Northwest, but they made it a bit more tougher to get them on a network.
I saw a text on the Mac and Jack's text line from a listener earlier who said, well, being on a more accessible channel is always good news for fans. And you are right. Like, yeah. I wish that I could always turn on just basic cable and find any game that I wanted to watch, find the Mariners there, find everything. But I think the bigger problem, and Curtis and I were talking about this, is the best place is a sports channel.
Yeah.
Like, the best place for your team, because it's they never have to compete with other programming, like Survivor or whatever these random channels will have, is that they be on Root, but that Root just be really accessible. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, maybe there's a digital-only option that you can have. Maybe there... I don't know what it is that you have, but, like, I like the idea of a regional sports network as the home for your sports that you watch, but...
The idea of it is great.
Yeah.
Like, that's what we all want, is a channel dedicated to local sports, but the issue has just been carriage. Like, it's
right.
Not accessible to
yes.
a lot of sports fans who don't want to pay for that upper tier cable package or don't want to stream on FUBA. And that's another thing too, is that Root Sports just has not been available on the most popular streaming platforms like Hulu and YouTube TV and all that. Like, if that were the case, I think you would have this wouldn't be such a big issue, but like the Kraken are trying to grow their fan base. What's going to grow it more? The local footprint here with a local network or a limited fan base that can access cable?
The only reason I have FUBO is because
Same.
Of the
Because
Mariners.
Of Root, yeah.
I couldn't tell you what else is on
Same.
FUBO. I don't know what else it offers. I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, Caitlin Clark reportedly nearing an eight-figure shoe deal with Nike. What's the real headline?
But I thought she was taking a pay cut by turning pro.
She was, in a sense. But here's the thing. She could probably still make that money if she were in college. She stayed at Iowa. Did she have another year eligibility?
She
had a COVID year. So if she were to take that, she'd probably make some money. Or she definitely would still make money in college. But it's not always about the money. It's about checking a box off in your goals. What are your dreams? I want to be the first pick in the WNBA draft. Boom, I got that. She's not being paid accordingly. I think that there's room for her salary to grow in the WNBA. I'm not saying she should be paid $10 million. The business has to make sense. $75,000 a year seems a bit low to me. I looked at their numbers. They can afford to give her at least six figures. But we knew that she was going to get her money elsewhere. She knew she was going to get her money elsewhere. If she didn't feel that way, I think she would have stayed in college and collected that NIL money and got it that way. But good for her, man. Nike, way to step up and pay this young lady. I think she's going to be great in the WNBA. Now she's going to go get some dogs now. They're saying little Sarah, who's here to get her PhD like 253, I'm here to ball out. So I'm interested to see how she looks against some of these dogs out there.
I liked your analogy from earlier of people saying, but she can make $5 million by going to the big three. And you said, but is that what she's been dreaming about since she was a little girl? Playing in the big three? Like, it would be cool. It would be awesome as the only woman. But you're right. That's not what she... I thought that was a great kind of way to look at it in terms of not always chasing the bag.
No.
I love that there are so many NIL options for college's biggest stars. I am shocked still every time I hear about WNBA salaries. It's almost like they're lower than I even remember them being. And this isn't me saying like, so that's fine. But this is me saying I'm happy to hear that there are options for Caitlin where she doesn't have to make this huge sacrifice, nor does she have to, if she doesn't want to play overseas, go there.
Yeah, she got options.
Headline rewrite.
253 says, put the Kraken on PBS. That'd be fun. With viewer support from viewers like you.
Is that like, was Reading Rainbow on PBS?
It was.
Yeah, anything like Rainbow. Educational.
They'd have telethons to drum up listener support, viewership support. That'd be great. Headline number three, the Seahawks brought in Rashad Penny for a free agent visit on Wednesday. What's the real headline?
You know, they say it's hard to quit a first round pick.
Show is.
Can't walk away. Remember, can't live with him, can't live without him.
Remember when he, in like in four or five games, he rushed for 600 yards?
Yes.
And we were like, he's here.
He's the truth.
This is it.
It was the end to the season, too, so he couldn't keep it going and prove it, but it was crazy.
The Hawks are good for that. You know, Rawls got you a little bit, and you got Penny. But listen, I'm all for this. You have your 1-2 combo in Zach Charbonnet and Ken Walker, maybe flip that Ken Walker, Zach Charbonnet. And you got to keep four horses in the stable. I think Rashad Penny can be good. We know when he's healthy. He can get busy. I don't know what happened with Philly. Didn't get the opportunities that he thought he was going to get. Signed a one-year deal. I believe the Hawks tried to sign him, but he wanted to start all over and said, look, change of scenery might be good for him. Didn't work out over there. Now there's less pressure on him. You don't have to be a guy. You come in, get your 3 to 4 carries a game if that's what they're going to give you, and contribute, man. So I'm all for Rashad Penny coming back and giving it another go because he's not going to be asked to be the number one guy.
You are listening to Bump and Stacy on Seattle Sports, and the Seattle Sports app extension talks are underway for one young quarterback, but how much has he actually proven? That's next.
Bump and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Taking a look around the NFL, we are going to start with extension talks. They're underway between Jacksonville and Trevor Lawrence. GM Trent Baalke confirmed today in his pre-draft press conference that those talks are underway. He said, quote, I try not to force anything. We've had some great talks, great conversations. We're working, but you can't force this stuff. He said the team talked with Trevor Lawrence's agents last night, too. Now, Trevor Lawrence is going nowhere. Anybody could have told you, casual NFL fans. My mother could have told you that Trevor Lawrence was staying in Jacksonville. The real question is a little bit of one that you addressed yesterday in Four Down Territory. I immediately thought of yesterday's Four Down Territory when I read this story, which is where you compare Daniel Jones' numbers to quarterback B, and quarterback B was a mystery, and then you revealed, oh, it's Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, and if we're going off of that, he should get at least $40 million a year, right? Because that's what Daniel Jones got. Their numbers are comparable. Last year was a bit of a step back. The year before that, they go to the playoffs. He throws for 4,100 yards, 25 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. Last year in 16 games, 21 touchdowns, 14 interceptions, and 4,000 yards. But his situation is different than Daniel Jones. Mm-hmm. The numbers are comparable, but you look at the way they play the game. You look at Trevor Lawrence and you say, we can build around him. He can run the ball. He can throw the ball. He seems like a leader. You look at Daniel Jones at times, he just seems like a one-trick pony who had himself a good year. He can run the football, had 700 yards for 10 touchdowns 1 year. But he doesn't seem like he is the alpha dog leader of that organization. Numbers are the same. Personalities and abilities are different. I would definitely make sure you take care of Trevor Lawrence. That argument yesterday was just fun because it's sometimes you got to throw stats away. And what am I seeing on the football field when I turn on the film? And you turn on the film and Trevor Lawrence is a starting quarterback in this league. You turn on the film with Daniel Jones, he seems like a guy who is a bridge quarterback who can hold it down for a couple of years until you draft another quarterback, which the Giants might do with the number 6 pick in the draft this year. I wouldn't be surprised if it goes down.
Let's look at, let's go cap hit. maybe that's not the, you know, we'll go contract value. That's a better one. Total contract value, the best quarterback in the league, Patrick Mahomes, $450 million. Next up is Joe Burrow. Now, when Joe Burrow got his extension, he had been to a Super Bowl. He had done amazing things with this team. He was a former number one overall pick, and he had proven a lot. Trevor Lawrence, former number one overall pick, was this unanimous, like everyone knew from Trevor Lawrence's freshman year he was going to be number one. He had an amazing career at Clemson, and he was number one. He hasn't accomplished what Joe Burrow did with Cincinnati. Different teams, different situations. Can you make him a top five player? I'll read you the top five, knowing that. Patrick Mahomes, $450 million contract value. Joe Burrow, $275. Justin Herbert, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen rounds out the top five. Jalen Hurts, the most recent, worth $255 million. Cap hit maybe isn't the best reflection of this because this is all going to be different. Deshaun Watson is in on that one. But average annual value has Joe Burrow at number one, Justin Herbert at number two. Obviously, Patrick did a bit of a restructure. Jalen, again, the most recent example. And I'll throw in Lamar in there at around 51, 52. Does Trevor Lawrence deserve 51, 52, which would make him top five in average value?
Does he deserve it off of his play? No. Does he deserve it off of his potential and just the timing of this whole thing? Yeah. I don't think he's played poorly enough to where you're like, he's not it. We got to move on to the next one. No, they're not thinking about drafting a quarterback because of all the things he has done. Has he done it to the level of a Joe Burrow, Patrick Mahomes, even Deshaun Watson? No, he has not done that. But it's all about timing. When is your contract up? Have you played well enough to where this team wants to keep you around for a while? Yes, his contract is up. He's played well enough to be around for a while. They're going to take care of him. Again, if Daniel Jones can get $40 million a year.
What were the Giants doing?
My God, Daboll, man. He was Daboll?
Joe, what's his face, right?
Yeah, the head coach over there. Anyway,
Joe Schoen.
Also, I was talking about the head coach, though. Yeah, it's all timing. He's done just enough. Yeah. The timing is good. The potential is there. He'll get his back.
From current quarterbacks in the NFL to future quarterbacks in the NFL, two teams are in line at number two, number three in next week's draft to take their future passers. One is standing pat. The others consider moving. According to John Keim, the Washington Commanders have no interest in trading back. The quote, "We feel great about staying at number two. I don't see a whole lot of scenarios trading down." All right, they're not moving. They need a quarterback. We got it. Meanwhile, New England Patriots director of scouting Elliot Wolf said of the team's number three overall pick that they're open for business. He said, "We have some holes we'd like to fill. We're a draft and develop team. The more picks we have, the better." That being said, one of the most important picks that you need is a quarterback. He did say that they haven't received any offers that would actually tempt them to move, but we could see a trade as early as number three.
Yeah, they'd be crazy to do that, though. You need a quarterback over there. You got Mayo, first-year head coach, Robert Kraft's stepson is how people have been describing him. You need a quarterback. If you do move back, you better not go too far. If the Giants want to throw you something, you go to number six, okay, you go ahead and get it. If the Falcons want to throw you something at number eight, you cannot get outside that top 10, though. You get outside the top 10, it gets a little crazy because Minnesota, Denver, Las Vegas, they even throw the Saints in there, might be in the business for a quarterback. New England, you need a quarterback. I get building your team around a quarterback and going that route. But when you have the number three pick in the draft, goodness, you got to take it in their situation.
What quarterback going number two influences what happens after that the most? Ready? Jaden Daniels. Drake May. J.J. McCarthy.
Oh, man. I think that if...
like, what could move the meter?
Jaden Daniels goes number two, which I expect. That might entice them to make a move and trade back. If Jaden Daniels is available and the Washington Commanders do something crazy and go Drake May or J.J. McCarthy, then I know for sure they're staying right there and they're taking Jaden Daniels. They've already expressed interest in that young man. Either way it goes, I don't think they should move. Stay at number three, get your quarterback, build around him.
All right, next up here, the NFL's reinstated five players who were suspended indefinitely before the 2023 season for violating the league's gambling policy. The five are former Lions players. So they get wide receiver Quintez Cephas back, safety C.J. Moore, defensive lineman Demetrius Taylor, and then the Colts get back linebacker Rashad Berry and current Commanders wide receiver Shaka Toney.
These are all for the Lions?
No, sorry, I misread the first part.
Oh, okay.
Three Lions. coming back. The Lions had like four players total that were wrapped up in this.
Goodness gracious.
Including Williams, who only got a short suspension. And then there's a Colts player.
If you got multiple players on your team getting in trouble for the same thing,
you better have a talk.
You got to have a sit down, a come to Jesus, a let's get this right. And they were probably in it together. They probably were sharing information, using the same apps or whatever network they were using. All bad, but welcome back.
Speaking of the Lions, their new uniforms have leaked, and they look very reminiscent of the Barry Sanders era. I have a controversial take on one of them. They appear to have scrapped their gray alternate uniform in favor of black. I'm going to say something.
You don't like the black.
I like very few colors with black. I don't like pink with black. Mm-hmm. I don't like blue with black. Mm. I don't like green with, well, that's okay. If it's like a lime, like a stark green contrast. Mm-hmm. I think black looks best with primary, kind of like a white.
Purple?
Nope.
You don't like the Ravens?
I do not like the Ravens. I don't like purple. I do not like the Ravens jerseys. I do not like
Commanders?
The Huskies when they had their Holiday Bowl like jerseys, jerseys. I did not like those. I do not like. There is a way to do black jerseys right. And I think it's best when it's white or like gold, silver.
Couldn't disagree more.
Well,
black
you're wrong.
Black looks good on everything. I wear black almost every day of my life.
Black looks good on everything. Does every color look good with black?
I like the Lions uniforms. All right, so would you take their black ones or you prefer the gray ones they have?
Like the gray ones. I also hate gray. I hate Wazoo's gray uniform so much. With
gray's
every
not
fiber
a,
of my being.
Gray should not be a primary uniform.
I dislike gray. Yeah. It's like when I think of the word
it's
matte,
an accent color.
I think of the word gray.
I don't know. I'm here for the black. I like some gray. I like the new unis. You know what? They need a black helmet with that black uniform, though. A black helmet on, and then I think it might pop. A matte black helmet.
Yeah.
I think it might pop if you see it.
You know, to make things equal here, the white jerseys are also not my favorite. I would like to say my favorite uniform. I would just like to make it clear. My favorite uniform is when they do like a pop of a primary old school looking color that's simple mixed with white. So the Lions, that like whatever color blue they have, it's not
called
a royal blue.
It's called Honolulu blue.
With the white. That one is my favorite. Likewise, I love Alabama's jerseys, Texas, University of Texas jerseys, like just a color pop with white.
You like, Arizona has some of the coldest uniforms in college football. Though I really the football team, how they put all their stuff together.
Yeah, we went the throwback route a couple of years ago, and that was. Mwah.
Throwbacks are almost all. Is there a throwback jersey you've seen from a team that you have not liked?
Yeah, the Pittsburgh Steelers are bumblebees.
Okay,
ugly.
Yeah. Theirs are very ugly. Those jerseys are very playing with leather helmets, half the team smoking,
in
the
locker
room.
Hey, we're at a football game, y'all. Hey, meet me at the park.
Is everyone allowed on the field here? What's going on? Uh-oh. You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. Coming up at 1, pick number 16 for the Seahawks, exploring the smart pick, the fun pick, and the wild card. Before we get to it, looking at the defensive line for our next draft profile. You're going to like this player. Don't go anywhere.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Our draft profiles continue with who the Seahawks could take at pick number 16 or just with their first pick off the board. So let's get to it. At pick number 16 in the first round, the Seahawks select UCLA defensive lineman Leiatu Latu. Now, Bump, before I throw to you, let me let people know that he is not projected to be the first defensive player off the board, all right? That is going to be maybe someone like Jared Verse, who's an edge rusher. Maybe Dallas Turner projected to go at number 8 to Atlanta. But Booger McFarland this morning had this to say.
Leiatu Latu from UCLA. And I know
he was asked who the best defensive player is.
About the medical, and I'm sure you guys know about that. Medically retired, the neck, has the surgery, comes back, has played the last 2 years at UCLA. But if you're asking me that, health withstanding, a guy that's going to make the biggest impact in the league, I think it's him, because I think he's NFL ready, meaning he understands pass rush, understands leverage, angles, how to use his hands. He's got some moves. He's not just an athlete running around a corner. I think his production is there. If you go back and look at his production at UCLA the last 2 years, and the tape stands out.
Now, Bump, help us understand this. Leatu Latu, on both these mocks that I'm looking at, both are by CBS sports reporters, is going in the 20s. And yet Booger McFarland says he's the best defensive player in the draft. Where's the gap there? I mean, is he?
Preference and projections. What do you think each team needs, right? Because the team need is important when you talk about where guys are going to go. Booger McFarland, I know a lot of people don't agree with some of his analysis, but he did play in the trenches for LSU. Look at the man's fingers. You know, dang well he played in the trenches. All right, them fingers are all mangled up.
They're going all kinds of directions.
He knows.
Not one pointing.
He knows what he's looking at. You know, and I agree with him. I think Leatu Latu may be the best defensive player in this draft. I think the best defensive player in the draft should come from the box. I think outside you get athletic guys, hip speed, and all that stuff. But we're talking about just defense, raw ability. I always look in the box, and I think Leatu Latu should be in that conversation. 6'5", 259 pounds. Let's get the knockout the way off top. 2020, he had that neck injury while he was at UW. He was forced to medically retire. He goes wherever he goes. They say, look, you're fine. Get up in there and do your thing. That's what he does. His sophomore year, he had 11 sacks at UCLA. He was a comeback player of the year. He also had 10.5 sacks his last year. When you turn on the film and you look at Latu, you're going to see him in a two-point stance most of the time. Two-point means his hand's not in the ground. He's standing up looking like a receiver. He is best out of the two-point stance. He can work out of the three-point. The reason why he is best out of the two-point stance is because he has a good first step and he has great body control. That's the first thing I look at when I'm looking to evaluate athletes. One, can he control his body? We know what he's trying to do. Can he do it efficiently? And he is extremely efficient. He's not going to wow you with raw athleticism. He's not jumping over offensive linemen, running down running backs on the back and then grabbing them one hand and pulling them down to the ground. No, he doesn't do that. But he does all of that stuff efficiently. He does run down the running back on the backside of the plays. He does get to the quarterback. He's good with his hands. He's so good with his hands and his arms. I had to check and see what his wingspan was. And he's not even graded really high when it comes to his wingspan, but he's so efficient. He understands, man, I cannot let that offensive lineman get his body into my body. They're going to win that. What do all my big boys, right? We used to come home from a long night in the Palouse, and we get to the house, and boys will be boys, and we start wrestling, right? What do the big boys want to do? They just want to grab you. You know, you never been it's wrestling matches.
Yeah, that's
no,
right.
Me and my girlfriends exactly do not come home from the bar and
you know
start
guys
wrestling.
Do? You play Floor is Lava, and you break
okay,
your elbow, dislocate
all,
your elbow.
No, first of all, no. That was an icebreaker activity during a summer class in college when me and my girls would come home from the bar in college. We would watch TV, order pizza, and fall asleep.
Well, Curtis, you understand.
I caught that vibe.
That's weird.
Boys will be boys. Someone wants a challenge, we start wrestling.
First guy takes his shirt off.
What?
He's getting all
Stop.
Sweaty. Yeah.
Yeah, this is what we do. This is what we did. That's what offensive line want to do. They want to wrestle you. They want to get you in their grasp. And he has arms ain't very long, but he understands I need to keep him away from me. He's
By the way, it's like 40 degrees outside when we're all doing this.
Yeah,
too.
It's cold.
It's cold.
He's good at setting the edge. He understands, like, I could beat this tackle inside and try to make a play in the backfield. But if I do that, I compromise the integrity of this whole defense. Good at setting the edge and just doing his job. Also, instincts are great. I saw him sniff out several screens. I believe it was against Utah. They try to send him to the right side. He sees the running back leaking out the backside. He understands, like, look, man, trust my eyes and what I'm seeing. They're taking me this way for a reason. He gets after the quarterback. He ran a 4.64 40. His closing speed is deceptive. You watch him and it doesn't seem like he's moving really fast, but because he has that quick burst and those long strides, he closes the gap between himself and the running back fairly quickly. I like what he brings to the table, man. He has a motor that he plays with. When I watched his pro day, he was the most efficient defensive lineman I've seen in a while. When I think about technicians and being efficient, I always think about receivers and DBs and maybe some linebackers, right? Because I think you can really show your technique. When you get into the closer you get to the line of scrimmage, the more raw and just more force that you use. With him, he uses that force, but he's so smart when he decides to slip, when he decides to swim, when he gets in the chest of a tackle, then he releases them and gets to the running back. He has a plan every single play. So he's the first defensive lineman in a while where I go, he's a true technician. Everyone has to have technique. But because he's not the biggest, fastest, or strongest, he has to rely on the technique. I like this kid. Whoever grabs him is going to be lucky.
Okay, so last minute and a half 2 minutes here thinking about Seattle's needs. We know that they need offensive linemen. They need inside linebackers. You addressed your defensive line in free agency this year and last year, bringing in Dre Jones. You've got some developmental pieces there. So it's not necessarily your biggest need. How does it help the Seahawks?
It just gives you depth. And Derek Hall hasn't been who they expected him to be yet. He's still young. Last year, he was a rookie. But there's a reason why he wasn't on the field consistently. There's something he's not doing or that Clint Hurt and the gang did not like about him. Now, he's going to have a new opportunity here with Dirty as defensive coordinator. So it brings you depth, and I think it brings you a guy right now who is capable of playing 65 to 70% of the snaps. I think it'd be great for competition, too. You draft a guy like Lautu Latu, Derek Hall, Boye Mafe, like, man, this is my spot. The competition breeds greatness. So depth and just, man, the ability to get after the quarterback. Imagine him with DT, Boye Mafe, Uchenna, throw Derek in there.
Yeah.
I really like the edge.
All right, Lautu Latu was our pick at number 16 for the Seahawks for the purposes of this draft profile, but we're going to play a little bit of a game coming up at one. Pick number 16 for the Seahawks, fill in the blank. The smart pick is, the fun pick is, and who's the wild card? That's coming up next.